Today on The Journey.
The question I want to ask you today, you who are successful, is how are you going to stand on this high wire and keep your balance? How are you going to continue to dance to the tune of success without compromising?
Have you ever felt you were sliding down into success, headed for a place the world considers lofty, one you know to be a destination glittering with corruptible gold? Well, on today's program, Ron Moore shares a cautionary tale that will help you navigate the hills and valleys of human accomplishment, all the while remaining true to yourself and God. And if you desire a deeper walk with God, we want to send you a copy of Ron Moore's booklet based on this sermon series. In its pages, you'll find a vibrant portrait of the great I Am. It's available for a gift of any amount, and you'll find it at ronmoore.org. Listen for the details later in the program. Now here's Ron with a message titled, The Slippery Slope of Success, On the Journey.
Success is a very slippery slope. Success means that you are pressed and you are stressed in many areas of your life. You are pressured for time. If you're going to be a successful person, you have to pour time into your job. Now where's the time for your family and yourself? And the Lord. If you're going to be and continue to be a successful person, you have to produce today. Yesterday's production is like yesterday's newspaper. It's no good. Criticism. You're in a high position. You make decisions that impact people's lives. Not everyone likes those decisions. There's criticism. And besides, some people want to be in that position and think they should be. Pressures to compromise ethically, because if you're going to stay there, you got to be competitive. And everyone else is doing some things that you feel like you've got to do. And pressures to compromise morally, because with positions of prestige and power come many, many temptations. Success is a slippery slope. Take your Bibles and turn with me to the 9th book of the Old Testament, the book of 1 Samuel. And today we have made our way to 1 Samuel chapter 18. And today we will see the rapid rise to success of a man named David. And we're going to see how he stands on that slippery slope, and we're going to learn from him. So we're at 1 Samuel chapter 18. In fact, let's start with verse 57 of chapter 17 to set our context. Remember in chapter 17, David has just killed Goliath. Verse 57, as soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Goliath, Abner, who was the commander of the army, took him and brought him before Saul, and with David still holding the Philistine's head in his hand. And he said, Saul did, whose son are you, young man? And David said, I'm the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem. And then chapter 18, verse 1. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day on, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return to his father's house. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Now let's think of this picture. David has just demonstrated himself as confident and successful and faithful in the Lord by going up against Goliath. And he looks this 10-foot giant in the eyes, and he takes his sling and he slings it and he kills Goliath. And after the victory, David goes in and he talks with Saul. And no doubt Jonathan, Saul's son, is there. And during that conversation, Jonathan becomes so impressed with David. He realized that David shares the same vision, the same purpose, the same passion for life. And Jonathan becomes a kindred spirit with David. And again, get this picture. David is standing there before Saul. He has just fought the battle. He just came from the fields with the sheep. No doubt his clothes are torn from the battle and they're worn from being in the pasture. He's standing there with a sling hanging down from one hand and the giant's head hanging down from the other hand. And Jonathan said, we have to do something about this. Look at verse 4. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing, his royal robe. He is the king's son. And he gave it to David along with his tunic and along with his sword and his bow and his belt. In just a matter of hours, David has exchanged his shepherd clothing for royal robes. He's been living out in the fields, and now he is living in the palace. Rapid rise to success. And it just keeps right on going. Look at verse 5. Whatever Saul sent him to do, David did it. And he did it so successfully that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. And this pleased all the people, Saul's officers as well. Royal robes, high position, success at war. And the young women go crazy over their new hero. Look at verse 6. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine and the women were out, they came from their towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs, with tambourines, with lutes. And they sang and danced, and this is the song they sang. Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Royal robes, high position, a song written about you now at the top of the charts, sung all over Israel. It's a wonder David's head had not swollen to the size of the Goliath's head that he held in his hand. But you know, the fast track of success has with it a few hurdles along the way. Not everyone's going to be pleased. Some will be threatened by you. Look at verse 8. Saul was very angry when he heard this refrain. It galled him. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. It's an interesting play on words here in the Hebrew. The word for jealous eye is literally to ogle something, to stare at it. So in verses 6 and 7, David has the young women ogling him. They are staring at him. They are watching him with delight. But on the other hand, he has Saul, who is there, ogling him, watching him with not so much delight. And the hatred and envy and jealousy intensified to this point. Look at verse 10. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully upon Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the harp, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it at David, saying, "I will pin him to the wall." And David eluded him twice. So verse 13, he sent David away from him, and he gave him command over 1,000 men, and David led the troops in campaign. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him, but all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. Well, Saul knows that he cannot get rid of David in an aggressive way, and so he has two plans to do it more indirectly. And he uses his daughters in both plans. You remember that he had promised the man who killed Goliath marriage to his daughter. And now he puts that plan in effect with one stipulation. He says, "I'll give you my daughter if you'll continue to fight the battles for me." This was his motive. If David continues to fight the battles, sooner or later, the Philistines will kill him. Look at verse 18. David said to Saul, "Who am I? And what is my family or my family's clan Israel that I should be the king's son-in-law? I can't be the king's son-in-law." And so he refused to marry the first daughter. Well, that plan A failed, so plan B goes into effect. And he has another daughter, Michal, who he learns loves David. And so he said, look at verse 21, "I will give her to him," he thought, "so that she may be a snare to him. And the Philistines will kill him." And he sent his attendants to David to convince David to marry Michal. And again, David doesn't want to do it. Look at verse 23. He says, "Do you think it's a small matter to become the king's son-in-law? I'm only a poor man and little known." Well, finally, Saul's attendants said this. Here's what you do. Since you won't just marry her outright, then earn the right to marry her. Saul wants you to go and avenge himself, take revenge on the Philistines, and he wants you to kill 100 Philistines, and if you bring back the proof of their death, he will give you Michal in marriage. So David said, "That's okay, that's a good idea." So he goes out and kills 200 Philistines, brings back the proof, lays the proof before Saul's feet, and Michal is given to David in marriage. Look at verse 28. When Saul realized that the Lord was with David and that his daughter Michal loved David, Saul became still more afraid of him and remained his enemy the rest of his days. The Philistine commanders continued to go out in battle, and as often as they did, David met with more success than the rest of Saul's officers, and his name became well known. David is now famous. This chapter begins with an unknown shepherd who kills a giant, and it ends with David, well known by everyone, loved by everyone, the king's son-in-law, a whirlwind of success, a rapid rise. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with success? Let's go back through this story, and I want us to draw out three principles, things we need to learn, things we need to know. The first principle is this. True success comes from the Lord. There will be illusions of success along the way. There will be those who rise to the top by unethical and immoral means. There will be those whose greed drives them to get to the top while they destroy everyone around them. And then they get there and realize how empty it is. But true success, lasting success, meaningful success, a success that lasts through life and through eternity, comes from the Lord. David understands this even before chapter 18. Remember in chapter 17, as he was preparing to fight Goliath, and he was before Saul, and Saul said, "You're too young to fight Goliath." He said, "Wait a second. I was out in the fields, and I killed a lion and a bear. And I know this. It was God who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear. I can't do it on my own. It was the Lord." As he looked Goliath in the eye, as he stared down this 10-foot giant, he looked him in the eye and he said, "You come at me with spears and javelins, but I come at you in the name of the Lord. And the battle is his, and he will fight for me, and he will deliver me from your hand." Look at verse 12 of chapter 18. Why was Saul so afraid of David? Because the Lord was with David. Underline that in your Bibles. The Lord was with David. Look at verse 14. And everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. Look at verse 28. When Saul realized that the Lord was with David, he was afraid and remained his enemy throughout his life. True success comes from the Lord. And I don't know what your definition of success is. I don't know where you are on your track. But I gotta tell you, unless you are there with the Lord, you're not successful. Not for long. Let's look at this and let me make two observations from here. I believe from this we learn that there is one criterion for success and two characteristics. And here's the criterion. I've already mentioned it, but I want you to write it down. The criterion of success is this: God's presence with you. It may appear to be successful. You may have all the stuff that makes you look like you're successful. But if you're honest with yourself, if you will stop for one moment to be honest in your heart, you will know that there is nothing meaningful about all this stuff. The criterion for success is the presence of the Lord. Two characteristics. The first one I find interesting in this passage is submission to authority. God sovereignly places people and authority in our life to train us and teach us and mold us. Again, let's learn from David. Remember back in chapter 16, Samuel, the prophet, poured oil over David's head and whispered in his ear, "David, you are the next king of Israel." And right after that, David left Samuel and went back to shepherd the sheep, that lonely, obscure job. David was sent by his father to go check on the three older brothers. He was to take food to them. And there he heard Goliath's defiance. And he stood up against Goliath. And he killed the giant. And now look at verse 2. From that day on, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return to his father's house. David lived under the authority of Saul. Look at verse 5. Whatever Saul sent him to do, David did. David, although he knew who he was willing to live under the authorities that God had placed in his life because he was willing to learn under those authorities. And let me ask you, are you willing to serve under the authorities God has placed in your life? I don't know who they are. I don't know the situations. They may be very difficult situations, but I'm asking you, are you willing to learn there? Learning to submit to authority is a characteristic of true success. And I want you to look again at this, because David is no wimp just standing there taking all that Saul has to offer. Remember, he is the one who stood against Goliath. He is the one who has killed the giant. He is the one who has had victory and success. And what's he do? He goes back and plays the harp for Saul. He goes back and does whatever Saul asks him to do. He goes back and serves Saul because he knows God has placed that authority in his life. True success comes from the Lord, and it comes from His sovereign training that He puts you through along the way. Here's another characteristic of humility. David's been anointed as a king. He has just killed the giant. There's songs about him. He is famous. Saul says, "Here's my daughter, marry her." David doesn't know his ulterior motives. David says, "Who am I to be the son-in-law of the king? I can't do it." Second daughter, "Marry her." David doesn't know the ulterior motives. He says, "Who am I to be the king's son-in-law? I'm just a poor and little-known person." Humility. And one thing missing from much success is that characteristic, isn't it? Because along the way, we have determined that we are the author of our own success, that our brilliance and our training and our gifts have put us there. We are at the top because we deserve to be at the top. But we have to remember, true success comes from the Lord. Are you willing to wait on His success? Second principle, true success comes with enemies. It's a package deal. That's why it's such a slippery slope. Because when you reach that position of success, there will be those who are trying to pin you to the wall with spears of critical words. There will be those who are out for your position. There will be those who are trying to bring you down, particularly if you stand as a Christian. There will be those who will try to find some hint of hypocrisy in your life. And they'll try to bring you down by that. David had his enemies. He had Saul. And Saul not only tried to pin him to the wall here, but Saul was his enemy throughout the rest of his life. And for the next 10 years, David will run from Saul. 10 years. And there he will learn how to respond to his enemy. And God will teach him in that process, just like He is teaching you. How are you responding to your critics? How are you responding to your enemies? How are you responding to those out to get you? True success comes with its enemies. Christ said this in Matthew chapter 5, verses 11 and 12. "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me, because you stand for me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Don't be surprised. They persecuted the prophets in the past who spoke for me. They will criticize you who speak for me. Blessed are you. Rejoice, be glad. As David was insulted and persecuted, so will we be. And the question becomes, how will we respond in God's training program He has put us in this path of true success? One more principle. Not only does true success come with enemies, but real success, true success, is accompanied by true friends. It's amazing in this chapter, with all the other events, that the writer, inspired by God, wants us to know that two people really care for David. Jonathan is one of them, and we're not going to spend much time looking at Jonathan, because for the next three times in 1 Samuel, I want us to see, through Jonathan and David, the characteristics of a godly friendship, and we'll see much from that. But let's look at Michael. Let's look at his wife. Because if you are on the ladder to success, men and women, there better be one relationship, if you are married, that you keep intact. And there better be one relationship that you work hard at. And there better be one relationship that you spend just as much time at and thinking about and planning for as you do for that business deal. And that's a relationship with your wife or your husband. Michael here in this chapter loves David. In the next chapter, she will save his life. She will stand against her father. Later on in 2 Samuel, we'll see that they had some difficulties in their marriage, like everyone does. But for now, we see a deep love and commitment and loyalty from Michael to David, from David to Michael. Because you see, when it's all said and done, your success at home roars like a lion. Your success at business meows like a little kitten. Doesn't make a lot of difference in eternity. Success is a slippery slope, isn't it? How are you going to stand? It's a high wire. How are you going to keep your balance? It's a beautiful tune to dance to. How are you going to keep from compromising? Some of you, you're so successful, you have convinced yourself that you can do anything. The problem is, your confidence is in and of yourself. And your success will be short-lived. So I'm asking you today to realize that success is not your own, it's from the Lord. I'm asking you today to submit your life before Him and see what He is teaching you from the authorities and the enemies He has put in your path. And I'm asking you today to do one other thing. Continue to develop that most important relationship in your home and have those around you who will keep you accountable, who will love you, who will encourage you, and who will look you in the eye and tell you when you're stepping out of bounds.
And please stay with us. Ron returns in a few moments with a special announcement. Also, we invite you to order a copy of God in Real Life. From the humble plea of a barren woman's heart to the very heart of God, from the plains of battle to the court of a troubled king, Ron Moore paints a scriptural picture of the Lord of majesty and mercy, the God who is and who is working in your life. You'll see in its pages the three primary attributes of God that color every event you experience. And in the seeing, you'll discover His transforming features in places where you least expect them, the broken, the sinful, and the victorious places. God in Real Life is yours for a gift of any amount when you visit ronmoore.org. Again, that web address is ronmoore.org, or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Your gift today will help keep the journey on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now here's Ron with a special announcement.
I'm here with Tunch Ilkin, and Tunch, we've got some exciting news about a trip coming up to your home country, and that would be?
Istanbul, Turkey, then the seven churches of Revelation. You know, it's great. I mean, the seven churches, I've been to the ruins at two of them, Ephesus and Laodicea. And they are very, very remarkable, but it's going to be a great trip.
The trip's going to be May 20th, 2019 through May 29th. Tunch and I will be leading this trip. And Tunch, I've never been to Laodicea. Talk about Laodicea.
Well, what's really cool about Laodicea is the ruins are not too far from this place called Cleopatra's Pool. And it's funny because the warning to the church at Laodicea when the Lord said, I wish you were either hot or cold, but since you are lukewarm, I will spit you out of my mouth. Well, the pool is a lukewarm pool. I remember swimming in that lukewarm pool, and I remember thinking, wow, I don't really like this. And the taste of the water had a little sulfur thing to it. And so one of the things you can see very clearly is that message to the church at Laodicea.
It's going to be a great trip. We invite you to come with us. It's May 20, 2019 through May 29. You can register at ronmoore.org or you can email Maria Stockman. That's mstockman@biblechapel.org. There's also an extension opportunity to go to Rome and see all the church history there and biblical history. the Bible does come alive.
Yes, it does.
Come and join us.
Again, that address is ronmoore.org. And we invite you to order Ron's uplifting booklet, God in Real Life. Its teaching will enable you to see the God who is and who works in you. You can get your copy for a gift of any amount when you visit us at ronmoore.org, or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. By the way, if you miss any of the messages in this series, you'll find them on the front page of our website at ronmoore.org. And if the journey has brightened your day and deepened your walk with Christ, please tell your friends and family about our program. Also, keep in mind that the journey relies on your generous donations to remain on the air, developing followers of Jesus Christ. Your gift today will be deeply appreciated. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron Moore next time as we walk together on The Journey.